People are canceling things. And there's a real, there's real fear, you know, in going on right now in our culture and our society. And I felt it was really important that we talk about that fear. Because, you know, there's a point where this overabundance of caution can become pull us towards panic. And that has its own, that carries with it its own problem and its own danger. That in many ways, you know, can alienate us, can isolate us, can cripple us. And, you know, we're people of faith who don't have to be driven by fear. And so I wanted just to, first of all, just ask, how are you doing? Like, what's been your experience this week? You know, it's been kind of this crazy thing. And so I want to put that out there. What are you thinking? Where are you at? You're tired. Okay, say more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we've seen a huge drop in the markets this week, right? The economic forecast is not good. I mean, there's an indication that we've entered a recession, right? And it could get worse, and right? So that's a reality that's gonna just be there. How about others? Yeah, and you are not the only one whose children are telling you that at this point. I mean, they're concerned for you, right? And there's this real, because anybody over 60 is vulnerable, and particularly people over 80 are even more vulnerable, like, which is a lot of us. And so it's important that we take that seriously. I mean, there really is a risk. For 80% of the population who gets this, it's going to be a non-issue. Like, for many young people, it's going to be a non-issue. But for people who are over a certain age, when there's an outbreak, there is need for concern. Kathleen, and then... Yes. Yep. A lot of you had plans to be other. You weren't going to be here this Sunday, right? You were going to be. I mean, I see Dale nodding too. Like, you were going to be in other places, right? And now you can't leave Canada. Yeah, Gloria. Yep. Yep. I mean that, and we need to avoid panic because there's an irrationality that happens when the panic sets in. Yeah, Dale. Oh, yeah. Yep. Overwhelmed, uncertain, those are two key phrases, right? That's really prevalent. Overwhelmed and uncertain about what's happening. Pat, yeah. Yes. That's part of the real economic impact, right? I mean, the people whose incomes are dependent upon, you know, who can't work remotely, they're dependent upon, you know, these kinds of, that's huge. Yeah, Gabby, you had your hand up. in Germany, yeah. I mean, you look at the rest of the world, I mean, and there is these huge closures. You know, it was actually really something that Bonnie Henry decided not to close schools this week. I mean, this is, if you look at what's happening in the news and you look at what's happening in the rest of the world, even just south of the border, you know, there's these drastic measures that are being taken. It's been phenomenal for me to be able to see Bonnie Henry and Adrian Dix get up there. These are very cautious, very smart people who have been able to say, you know what, we are still at low risk. Bonnie Henry, you know, on Friday, she said, go live your life. It's important that we not shut society down. She said, she even said, go to restaurants, right? This is the health. She's telling us it's okay still to go to restaurants, right? That's phenomenal to me. And we're able to do that because of the testing that they've been doing. They have been on this thing from the very beginning. They have a really clear sense of where this is spreading within the province. That's why she can say it. You cross the border, they've not done that. They don't have a control on it and a handle on it in the way that we do up here, which is why there's this mass shutdown of everything. It's the wisest thing they can do because they don't know. We have a good sense up here, right? And right now we're actually relatively safe still. Yeah, Antoinette. Denial, okay. Yeah, right, to say, oh, this isn't really happening. It's not gonna affect me. Yeah, it's not really that bad. Yeah. You'll sleep better. You would sleep. I had to do that with news out of the United States and Donald Trump. Just don't pay attention anymore. It's so much better for my blood pressure. Yeah. Ken, go ahead. Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, I was hearing somebody talk about this psychologist who was looking at the panic buying. Because things are uncertain right now, and because it does feel like you don't have any control, things are not normal in the way they used to be, and in many ways we feel powerless, that's anxiety provoking. And so one of the things about being able to go to the grocery store and buy 120 rolls of toilet paper is, all right, I feel like I'm going to be better, right? It's one thing that you do to make yourself feel better, right? And of course, it's totally irrational, and yet, but it makes, you know, there, you have a sense of control by being able to do something like that. And that's what happens in a situation where there is such uncertainty. You know, there is a real threat that needs to be taken seriously. And so it's important that we're taking preventative measures to stop the spread of disease. Like we're amping up cleaning door handles and places, surface areas where people touch. The cleaning folks will be in here cleaning the top of these things, you know, during the week so that we're not, you know, spreading disease. It's important that people are staying home if they're feeling any kind of cold or flu-like symptoms, coughing into your shoulder. All those things, we need to be doing those things. We're not going to be doing coffee hour anymore until we can know that we're you know, as preventative measures. So it's important that we do take some things seriously, but it's also important that we not live in fear around these things. These are things being done to protect the those of us who might be vulnerable, and to just in case there is some sort of larger outbreak. But the reality is, we don't have an outbreak yet here in the Lower Mainland. Right? There has not been a community outbreak here in the Lower Mainland. There is in the care centers, in those North Shore care centers, Lionsgate Hospital, people who've been traveling, but we've not had an outbreak here in the Lower Mainland. Yeah, Rose. This is when we learn to really wash our hands, right? Who knew? We've gotten this far in our life and we didn't know how to really wash our hands, right? And now we all know how to really wash our hands, and we're doing it. That's a cultured, life-changing thing right there. Yeah, Brenda. Yeah. Yeah, greater sense of the common good. Yeah, Verna. I'm not Verna, I'm sorry. Norma, yeah. And I feel like we can trust her, right? If she's saying, you know, we're going to discourage events over 250 people, but she's okay with people under 250 meeting, I feel like we can trust that, right? So I feel like, okay, what we're doing here this morning is okay, you know? And when she says we should close churches, I'm going to trust that too, because she will ask us not to meet when she feels like it is a threat not to meet. But until then, I feel like we're okay. Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah. And that's huge. And that's why I was encouraged that she decided not to close schools. I mean, it helped that we were going into spring break, right? But she recognized you take an action like that, and then there are unintended consequences that create other kinds of problems, because now all of a sudden healthcare workers have to stay home with their kids. Well, then healthcare workers aren't available to help everybody else in the system. And who does childcare? It's grandparents, right? And you don't want to have grandparents necessarily doing childcare, or that there's a greater risk, right? And so maybe it's better to keep schools open and know that it's okay and treat these things well. It's that kind of thoughtfulness that I think has been very helpful. Yeah, Wally. Oh, it is, and it's amazing how that, you know, that stuff kind of kicks in. I think that's why it's important for us that as long as we can still meet, we still meet. I think there is some benefit for us all coming together. I mean, countering the fear, like countering the pull to kind of withdraw from each other. I was listening to David Brooks, who's a commentator down in the U.S. He'd been doing a lot of research on the 1918 flu pandemic and people's response. And they did social distancing down there too, but they totally withdrew into themselves. they lost their sense of community. They lost their sense of social connection. And they almost ignored each other. I mean, and when they came out of it, they felt a lot of guilt around that. You know, I mean, that was 100 years ago. I think for us, it's really important that actually we not lose that connection. We not be given over. Because once we start getting that, start feeling that sense of social isolation, that's where fear can be so much more powerful. And we'll be able to have more power in our lives. So we're doing, you need to know that we had a leadership retreat yesterday. And the wardens were talking about, you know, what do we do? We've been advised, the bishop is guiding us, that we need to think about what will happen if we have to stop having services together, right? So part of our plans are to go ahead and work on figuring out a way that we can live stream some sort of service on a Sunday morning, whether it's via YouTube or Facebook, so that if we still want to gather together, you know, virtually at that time, you know, I'll be here, Maggie and Dan can be here, we can maybe sing a hymn and do a reading, and I'll give a sermon and say a prayer and do a hymn and something short like that, but just as a way of keeping us connected, you know, during that time period. We're encouraging everybody who's in a committee or a leadership position, Detlef will be sending out an invitation that the diocese uses Zoom as an app of meeting remotely. It allows people to meet remotely so you can get, you know, a number of people on the same call on the computer screen at one time and have meetings. So the diocese says we can use the diocese license to have it free, so we're going to encourage people to get Zoom so that if we need to have a finance committee meeting, if we need to have a parish council meeting, and we can't meet in person, I mean, we'll try to meet in person as long as we can and as long as it's still safe and prudent. But, you know, otherwise we'll meet by Zoom. And then other people, you know, part of what people were saying yesterday is like, well, you know, it's still okay to meet outdoors, you know. What does it look like to us to do just, and some people were saying it's really important that we still pray together. I mean, they felt there's something about coming together to pray together. It's important to come together and sing together. You see what the Italians are doing, that they're standing on their balconies out of just defiance of the isolation, right? And they're saying they're singing, there's something about music, but it's also the staying connected to each other and feeling like you're part of something larger than yourself, right? What would it look like us to do a pop-up prayer in the parking lot at 5 p.m. on a Friday, right? And we can just gather in a circle and sing a couple hymns and pray and then go home, right? And you know, and that relatively risk-free, but it's a way of staying connected, you know, if we wanted to do a pilgrimage around Como Lake, like we could all gather and just do a walk together around Como Lake. I mean, I think it's important because, you know, we've learned about flattening the curve at this point. And, you know, if our health resources is aligned here, and, you know, the challenge is that if the outbreak happens too quickly and you get this huge spike, the number of cases that need respirators and need care are greater than what the health system can accommodate. So the reason why we're doing all this social distancing stuff is so that we can slow the speed of the outbreak down, because there will be some sort of outbreak. But it's a slower rise, and it stays within the ability of our healthcare system to deal with it adequately, right? But that also means it's going to happen over a longer period of time. We're probably not going to be over this in a week or 2 weeks. It's probably going to be much longer than that. And necessarily so to make sure that we don't overload the health system. So we're going to have to be proactive in terms of, okay, how do we still stay, how during this time, because that's a long time. If we're talking, you know, weeks, months, potentially, you know, how do we maintain our connection? And so I think it's important that we do that, right? I just for our own spiritual benefit, that we're not isolated, that we're not, you know, that we can come together and counteract the fear and remind ourselves that God is good and God is in the midst, and, you know, and that there is actually hope, and that realistically we are going to be okay. Like, we really are going to be okay. And it's hard to do that when you've got, you know, it feels like the world is falling apart at this point. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be prudent and not take precautions, and I am encouraging people, if they do feel like you need to guard your health and it's not wise for you to show up to something like this, then by all means, guard your health. That's important. If you're particularly you're at risk or you're immunocompromised in some way, we need to do that. If you're, and but we'll do that by being intentional about protecting the space. So if we have cold or flu-like symptoms, stay home. Don't show up. Even if you know it's just the cold, stay home, right? Because that way we're helping protect each other at that point. And creating a space where, like Verna, you can say to your kids, actually, I trust my church. I trust what's happening there. I feel like it's still okay for me to go and worship in my worshiping community. I'm gonna be okay. I wanna make sure that we're able to keep this space safe for people to come. But I also recognize that some people, there's still a risk in that. I mean, realistically, you probably are safer staying home, right? And so you need to make an assessment of that risk. But I trust Bonnie Henry, I trust the Archbishop to make those decisions that when they feel like, actually, there is too much of a risk and we should, in order to protect people, we should not meet, we will do that. But until then, I think we're okay. Other thoughts, reflections on that? Yeah. There is an opportunity here. Right, for us to learn. I think Tony's right. There's an opportunity for us, and hopefully this is a moment where we actually can come, it can strengthen our bonds and strengthen our community together as a church. And I'm curious about, you know, making sure there are ways to do that. So if you have any ideas, please talk to me. Please talk to Detlef and Connie and Julie, our wardens. If there's ever a moment where you feel like you need care or in terms of what's coming up, please do contact me. If you're like, hey, I'm feeling really, really nervous and I just need to talk to somebody who can pull me back from the ledge, right? Let's be in conversation with each other. At this point, I want to show a video just because we used it yesterday at the leadership retreat. And it's a great video about being church together and what it means to be church. So I thought it would be, I'd end with that. So if somebody could get the lights, please.
So a little while after my wife and I first started going out, I was looking for a low-key date. So we decided to go apple picking. which basically means that you show up at this orchard in some grubby clothes and you pay some money, pick a few apples, and you get the privilege of some manual labor. So it was the end of an ordinary day in early fall, and we showed up at this place in our grubby clothes and took out our bag, and before long we were filling it and already starting to plan, you know, the things we were gonna make. Crumbles and pies and candied apples. And I suppose that anyone who was there, who was watching this from the outside, would have found the whole thing pretty ordinary. But that's not how I remember it. I remember time stretching out. I remember the blues being bluer and the oranges and pinks being somehow more orange and pink than usual. And it was like me and my old t-shirt and my bag heavy with apples and this run-of-the-mill sunset were all caught up into another world just for a few moments, simply because of who I was with. So have you ever had that happen? You're fumbling your way through something relatively commonplace, but because you're in the company of that person, or those people, the ordinary thing becomes something you hadn't counted on, something almost unrecognizable, almost like you catch a glimpse of different world, something lying just out of the range of ordinary sight. Maybe you're with a group of friends or some coworkers or some people from church. And just for a moment, kindness trumps selfishness, or the things that pull us together actually win out over the things that pull us apart. You start to begin to maybe believe that we're not alone. And right in the middle of the ordinary, you catch a glimpse of something extraordinary. So picture an ordinary loaf of bread, or better yet, a communion wafer. You know, one of those little flat discs that some churches use for communion. And the thing is basically wheat and water, and it tastes like cardboard. There is nothing special about that. What could be more ordinary than that? But when Jesus breaks bread with his disciples, something different happens. Somehow that very same plain, ordinary bread, Jesus says it's his body, broken, given for us. Like suddenly bread isn't just bread anymore. In the company of Jesus, our daily bread becomes the bread of heaven. And our tangible and physical eating of the bread becomes this moment of connection with Jesus. He and us, and we and him. You know, they say that some people used to call Jesus a drunkard and a glutton because you could always count on finding him at the dinner table. Can't you still? Isn't he still at the table, inviting us into this meal that's so obviously ordinary, and at the same time, a window into a different world? So what if this isn't just a nice but irrelevant ritual, one more odd thing that churchy people do on a Sunday? What if in some way it's a clue to the whole of life, to the very heart and center of this Jesus thing? And what if the most important thing about me and about you is that we're invited? Could it really be that God is inviting us to a new way of experiencing the world, others, and ourselves? Inviting us to find ourselves at the table with Jesus, taking part in a new reality that's breaking into the ordinary stuff of life in the here and now. Because that could be worth waking up to. That could be worth sharing. What would it be like to find the extraordinary tucked inside the ordinary all over again?
What I liked about that was just its affirmation of who we are as a people who come together as community. and in the ordinary things we do of just singing songs and, you know, sharing this meal of, you know, fortunately we have real baked bread, but, you know, even styrofoam wafers, that there really is the presence of God and the presence of Jesus in our midst when we do those things. So I think that's why it's important we still continue to gather as long as we can. Amen. The bulletin says we have an anthem, which is not going to happen this morning.